is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
This is our breakdown. This is our update for you on where things are at in the trial of Lindsay Clancy. Let's get caught up and take your questions, your thoughts in the comments section. As we go through this, we will continue our conversation there because there's a lot to talk about. There's so many elements of this case at play right now. This video, we're going to be tackling basically what happened on Friday the 7th. It was a big day in the trial of Lindsay Clancy. The last clinical description of Lindsay Clancy before her children died was just two words long. Dr. Jennifer Tufts, a physician who treated her for months, testified that Clancy was depressed and flat the day before the killings. She said it under oath at Plymouth Superior Court as a witness that was called by the prosecution. The next day was January 24th of 2023. Clancy allegedly strangled her three children with exercise bands in the basement of the family's home in Duxbury, Massachusetts. Cora, 5, Dawson, 3, Callan, 8 months old. Her lawyers don't dispute that she did it. The trial is about what was happening inside her mind when she did. August 7th was day 9 of testimony. Put that question to the people who were treating her. What did Lindsay Clancy's own doctors actually see in the weeks before January 24th? It's a question that a lot of us have been discussing. You've been discussing. We've all been discussing. Well, Clancy, of course, as you know, if you're just catching up, she faces first-degree murder charges in front of Judge William Sullivan. Her defense is postpartum psychosis. It's a severe illness that can follow childbirth and detach a mother from reality. It's rare, 1 in 1,000. A lot of doctors never even see it in their entire lifetime of practicing. Her lawyers argue she was so sick she couldn't recognize the wrongfulness of what she was doing, which Massachusetts law calls lack of criminal responsibility. It's basically the insanity argument. Both psychiatrists the state called carry a second label besides witness. Yahoo News reported that Lindsay Clancy and her former husband Patrick are suing McLean Hospital and several of her providers in two wrongful death lawsuits. Tufts is one of the defendants. The state built part of its murder case on the same doctors the family says failed her that are suing her civilly. So let that be known going into how one may testify in a criminal trial while also facing civil liability in a separate one. You don't necessarily want to admit to something over here in criminal that may end up costing you a little cash on the other side. Either way, though, the testimony from court, it was something to see. Let's break it down for you. The morning's testimony broke apart before the first cross-examination could even start. The trouble began with a whisper the day before. On August 6th, a medical examiner testified about the autopsy of the youngest child, Callan. Callan sobbed through it and was wheeled out of the courtroom for a break. Or Clancy, rather, sobbed through it and was wheeled out of the courtroom for a break as they discussed Callan. As she left, the courtroom's live stream microphone picked up a whisper. There's a whisper on the mic. Somebody was saying something. Who's making snide comments into the mic? It's reported all over the place. And various places have different interpretations on what it might mean. At the end of the day, if you really break it down, it's not all that hard to decipher, quite honestly. We'll get to that in a moment. Something that should never have been said on the mic by someone who should not be saying that out loud. Midway through the morning, after the first psychiatrist finished her direct testimony, Sullivan tried to call her back for cross-examination. Defense attorney Kevin Reddington interrupted and refused to take it quietly to the bench. Then he made his accusation in open court. The prosecutors were the voice on that microphone, the voice in the whisper. And the words were, shut her up. NBC Boston reported that. And if you just listen to it, you hear it, shut her up. Shut up, the woman who's having an emotional moment because the state chose to drag her out in front of the world like a witch and put her on trial. And says, oh, this postpartum psychosis, this condition that you have, along with bipolar, we're not going to recognize that as being a thing. We're just going to treat you like you're an evil person that decided one day you were going to kill your family. Basically a witch. We're going to ignore all science. We're going to ignore all medical facts of this case. We're going to ignore your family that has forgiven you, that has also said, horrible, but we understand. I forgive you. This was beyond your control. Everybody that cares about her and loves her, that has every right to say, burn her at the stake. More than anybody else, those are the people who are standing by this woman, and the state of Massachusetts, in its infinite wisdom and track record, is in 2026 still treating Lindsay Clancy like a fucking witch. They are. This is just a modern day of it. You're denying just basic medical facts of and psychological facts of this case and making false equivalents to other cases that are nothing like this. And there's plenty of parents who try to argue this and are not that. Every once in a while, one of them's that. And this case has all of the evidence to prove it. All of the evidence that she was trying to get the help she needed so damn desperately, her family doing everything they could as well. Did people make some mistakes? Did people go out to take a breather every now and then and maybe shouldn't have because they didn't realize just how damn dangerous the situation was? Yes. I challenge any one of you who've never been in that sort of situation in life to play it perfect. To play any situation perfect that you've never been through that could potentially turn dangerous, and you treat it the way that you may look back on it retrospectively and go, well, if I would have done this, maybe this would have worked out better. Yes, we all have those moments in life, and you got to give people grace because they're human. Nobody wanted those kids to die. Nobody thought she was going to go that far, even though she's sitting there telling people, I'm having these thoughts, I'm having these feelings. And that's a flaw in us as human beings. We are very bad at judging the very dangers that we may be in, especially when another human being is telling it to us, because we always look at ourselves going, well, I couldn't be capable of that. How could this person that I trust be capable of that? Because everybody's brain is different, and sometimes brains go bad. But we don't like to talk about that or mental health or get people educated in that world at all. And then when they go bad, we're all like, I had no idea. I was watching several episodes this week of Evil Lives Here on this Investigation Discovery. And there were so many where it's just, we had no idea. And the person's literally telling them ahead of time, like, the shit they're capable of. And every time it's like, oh, I just didn't take it seriously. Maybe we should. If anything has taught me working in this field, working in this lane, is that you should. When people are saying extreme, crazy things out loud,
They might mean it, especially if it's like really dark and not a joke and potentially dangerous. They might just mean it. People in healthy states of minds don't make weird threats about harming others or themselves for fun. But it's a lot easier to tell ourselves, we're good at that. We're very good at that as humans. And misjudging. There's a lot of that in this case. So anyway, that's, I don't know how I got from there, from Shutter Up. But that's where this case is at. You have the prosecution getting upset when the woman they're trying to malign and treat literally as a modern day witch has an emotional outburst because you're parading her in her wheelchair into a courtroom for a crime she's already admitted committing because you won't accept the medical facts of it. Shut her up. Maybe someone should shut you up, bitch. Maybe. Maybe. Maybe the Bar Association can have something to do with that. Assistant District Attorney Jennifer Sprague appeared confused and turned to her fellow prosecutor. It's according to Boston.com. All verklempt. I don't know what they're talking about. Spokesperson for the District Attorney's Office said a review of the video showed someone else entirely whispered, "Shut it off." A reference to a courtroom monitor displaying autopsy photos, according to the Boston Globe. That's what it was. And maybe that's what it was. Maybe that's a creative explanation. I don't know. You're the one prosecuting a woman as a witch. So I'd say anything's possible at this point. Nice bow, by the way. The jury wasn't in the room for any of it, the Globe noted. Sullivan answered with a warning to the whole courtroom. "There are microphones all around," he said, "and anyone caught making comments would be escorted out with no second chances." Then the testimony resumed. And what happened in that testimony? Dr. Alia Goodhart works at McLean Hospital, a psychiatric hospital in Belmont, Massachusetts. Clancy arrived there by ambulance on New Year's Day in 23 and checked herself involuntarily. Goodhart testified that she stayed nearly 5 days. Goodhart joined her care on January 3rd. Clancy told her she felt numb and worried about depending on an antipsychotic drug to sleep. Goodhart testified. So she tapered that medication down. CBS Boston reported Goodhart considered her a low-risk patient, anxious, but not a danger. The reporting on her diagnosis splits. WBUR reported an initial diagnosis of insomnia with a mental health condition, while CBS Boston reported major depressive disorder severe without psychotic features. Goodhart also testified that Clancy had disagreed with an earlier physician's suggestion of possible bipolar disorder. Goodhart considered that diagnosis herself, but she'd been on the case for a single day and didn't have enough information to make it actually stick. On January 5th, Clancy reported she was sleeping again. She wanted to go home for a long-planned belated birthday party for her daughter, Cora. She booked her own outpatient follow-up, and Goodhart said she was comfortable with the discharge as long as Clancy saw her mental health provider the next day. Asked why she felt safe sending Clancy home, Goodhart described a caring mother who seemed focused on the future. She had support at home and follow-up care already scheduled. McLean sent her home that afternoon with a two-week supply of Ativan and Trazodone, an anti-anxiety drug and sleep aid. She had never stated that she had any thoughts of harming anybody else, Goodhart told the jury. 19 days after that discharge, all three children were dead. Then Reddington took his turn. He asked Goodhart how many women with postpartum psychosis, I need to say that, because there's a difference between postpartum depression and postpartum psychosis. Two very different things. How many had she treated in her career? She paused before answering, "I haven't seen any." The cross kept digging. According to Yahoo News account of the testimony, McLean never requested Clancy's earlier mental health records, never tested her blood, and never measured the depth of her postpartum depression during her stay. The hospital treating her 3 weeks before the killings was working from a partial file because they didn't do the work. Dr. Jennifer Tufts came next, and her testimony with Clancy ran deeper. She began treating her in September of 2022, a few months after Callan was born. Clancy was reluctant about medication at first because she was worried about side effects, Tufts testified, though by the time they met, she was considering it and wanted to learn which drugs might help. Tufts also walked through Clancy's history with those drugs. The Boston Globe reported she had taken antidepressants in nursing school, and that she went on Zoloft for about a week after her second child was born, mentioning only mild early side effects. The Boston Globe also reported one number from the testimony. Tufts wrote 12 of the 30 prescriptions Clancy received in the 4 months before her children died. That's 30 prescriptions in 4 months, more than we originally thought. The 13, that was just a shorter span. 30 in 4 months. From multiple providers. Somewhere inside of that stack of paper, the defense says, a sick woman got sicker. The jury also heard from people outside the medical charts. Kimberly Hardy ran the children's playroom at Kingsbury Club in Kingston, where Cora and Dawson stayed. While their parents worked out, Hardy testified the kids were always excited when their mother picked them up. She was always on time, and she never seemed angry with them. Hardy once asked if the family wanted to bring the baby, too, and the Clancys said they were nervous about colds during flu season. Sarah Conia, longtime friend of Patrick Clancy, testified that Lindsay looked thinner and more frail by the fall of 22. The Clancys brought Cora and Dawson to a bonfire with the Carneys on January 22nd of 23, and Clancy seemed quiet but otherwise normal. Her husband Kyle had testified about the same night a day earlier. Carney asked Lindsay at the bonfire how she was doing, and Lindsay answered that she was good. 2 days later, her children were dead. Both sides spent the day working the same witness. Prosecutors underscored that Clancy denied to her clinicians that she wanted to hurt anyone or planned to kill herself. That's the argument the state is building. The illness her defense describes shows up on none of the paperwork from those weeks. Yeah, you know what? It doesn't always show up. That's how this works. Why are we acting surprised? Reddington used the same hours for the opposite case, 30 prescriptions in 4 months, kind of the whole deal. A hospital that never requested her records or tested her blood, and a discharging psychiatrist who had never treated postpartum psychosis. He didn't need a defense witness to put any of that in front of the jury. The prosecution's witnesses carried it in for him. The family civil lawsuits already allege exactly that. The providers failed her, and the suits claim on August 7th, the jury in the criminal case listened to those providers describe their own work. Tufts finished her direct examination late in the afternoon, and Sullivan sent the jurors home for the weekend. She's returning for cross-examination as the trial is resuming, and Reddington has already signaled a target. During Goodhart's cross, he pointed at a Zoloft prescription, Tufts wrote. The stakes for cleanly from here. A first-degree murder conviction in Massachusetts means life in prison without parole. A finding of not guilty by reason of lack of criminal responsibility means commitment to the state mental health facility. Whichever way the jury goes, the trial record now holds a timeline neither side disputes. She asked for help in December, checked herself into a psychiatric hospital on New Year's Day, and left in time for a birthday party. The day before her children died, by her own psychiatrist's testimony, she was depressed and flat. There's a reason every prescription, every chart, and every discharge decision is being read aloud in the Plymouth courtroom. It says a lot about the care that she was giving, or lack thereof, from a woman in distress begging for help. What the jury does with it is going to be very telling. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Links are in the description. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you get podcasts if you want to listen to the trial testimony. throughout the day as it comes down. We're dropping it for you on our podcast platform. The link is right there for the podcast platform, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, iHeart, it's all there. It's a link tree. It takes you wherever you get your podcasts. Follow that, and you can take our show with you on the go. Listen to us in the car, on your walks, at the gym, wherever you may be, other than just on YouTube. Take us with you there. We do appreciate that. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.